Blog Talk Radio.
Doing everyone, this is Sana Akori, and guess what? You're absolutely correct. This is Taino Radio, Radio Taino. Bienvenido a todo el mundo, Mabrica. Y mucho gusto a conocer a todos ustedes, los nuevos escuchantes de la Radio Taino. De tu acomoda, new listeners to Taino Radio, and also all you consistent listeners. Every single week, I'm seeing the statistics. And I can't believe it. I'm looking at Japan, New Zealand, Australia, Russia, Finland, Ireland, the United Kingdom. I'm looking also at, Norway, that's right, Germany. Man, we got some awesome people, awesome countries listening in constantly, and also downloading our shows. So all you future listeners out there, thank you so much. I can't forget Mexico, Argentina. That's right, I got Colombia listening in. We have the great Turtle Island. That's right, Turtle Island listening in always. The great nation of Canada, the indigenous First Peoples who are listening, the First Nations people, thank you so much for tuning in. And how can I forget? Yes, I cannot forget. Doborinken, Quisqueya la Bella, Jamaica. Man, this is beautiful. All you countries tuning in. Also, Italy. Man, Italy's been with us for a while. All you listeners out there. Now, I want to believe these are Taino folks, indigenous Caribbean folks, throughout the whole world representing. That's amazing. And those that are just curious to find out what is Caribbean indigenous peoples, didn't they die? Didn't Columbus kill them all? Didn't, as some people say, wipe them out? We're still here. Because, as San Agori would say, existence is our resistance. And right now we have our hostess of Caribbean, indigenous. Oh, I said it backwards. Indigenous Caribbean. What is that? Study hour. We have, I think I got some issues with the studio. This is Natalie Huber Rodriguez. Are you with us?
I am here.
There you go. Listen, I have some issues. I'm having issues with my board, man. You know, the night after.
As always.
The show, there's always issues. Always issues. And I just can't explain it.
That must be it. I got the cursed spot.
Yeah, man. Oh, but wait a minute. I think my board just opened up. Wow, look at that.
Oh, now we got it. Okay, I was wondering about the song.
In front of me, and sisterly love. In the street of Philadelphia, from the tribal nation of Higuayagua. Can you believe that, I brought you back thousands of years to Casibahagua?
No, that was awesome. I was afraid for a sec that we weren't going to do the intro song because of your studio issues. But I'm glad, you know, we got it anyway.
Well, you know, Spooky Lou is so much those spirits hang out. You know, we were doing, you know, yesterday, last night, we were doing the 2-hour show. We were doing on that ranch. I can't remember the ranch in Utah. What's
not the Skinwalker Ranch.
I can't believe it. Oh, my God, I spent 2 hours talking about it. I can't remember
not
the name.
Not the Skinwalker Ranch, right?
That's it.
Was that it?
That's the ranch we're talking about. The Skinwalkers, yep.
Oh, y'all. Oh, man. So, dude, they won't even talk about it out there, though. Talking about it is taboo. They say, like, the spirits come out even if you just, like, talk about it.
Oh, you mean the nations? I mean, the indigenous peoples or anyone?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're very – that whole area is, like, you know, outsiders, you know, tourists and stuff. A friend of mine was telling me who lives out there. She was like, oh, yeah, tourists come up here, and, you know, they always want to ask about that. This whole area is known for, like, weird paranormal activity aside from, like, the Skinwalker Ranch. Apparently there's been, like, UFO sightings and just a lot of weird phenomena that a lot of people chalk up to paranormal. And she says all the indigenous people, you know, whenever anybody tries to ask them about it, because I guess they feel they have some kind of in or some knowledge about it that outsiders don't have, and that she says the indigenous people will not talk about it because they believe doing so kind of invites like negative energy or something into it. It's like taboo, you know what I mean?
Look at that. Well, you know what's crazy? I found a video from that show, the Skinwalker Ranch show. It's on the History Channel.
Yeah, there was like a documentary series. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of sensationalized a lot of the stuff, but a lot of stuff they're doing, they caught on camera, a lot of the paranormal stuff.
Mm-hmm,
but
right,
I found one segment that I posted last night from an interview. But they managed to find what's that tribe now? The Ute Nation.
Yeah,
Ute
or Ute, depending
found,
on who you talk to.
what's the other way of saying it? Ute?
I've heard people say Ute before. I don't know which is correct, honestly. I think it's Ute, but I've also heard people say in Colorado
Ute,
say
right?
Ute. Yeah, yeah, because that's where the name Utah comes from. But I mean,
Ute.
Who knows? We all could be wrong.
Yeah. No, I think they introduced him as a Ute medicine man.
Yeah.
Forget the man's name now, but. But he was on location and he did a ceremony blessing of the land, pretty much asking for, you know, positive energy, not negative, blah blah blah. But then he cuts out. He's gone. He was gone. He's like, I ain't chilling. I ain't hanging out here.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. They know not to mess with that. And quite honestly, yeah, I don't blame them. I mean, my friend and
I mean, he looked scared. Yeah.
No, not
yeah, he didn't look scared.
Not a fear.
He just, like, respect.
I think
respect,
it's kind of
respect.
Right. Respect. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I don't think it's like a fear necessarily. It's more just like this is something beyond us, and you know, more powerful than all this. And it's better not to like treat it as a tourist attraction, you know, or just to not to stir things up just for the sake of it, for sensationalism or for
exactly.
entertainment purposes. You know, that's the vibe I get anyway. And yeah, I think respect also sometimes like comes with a certain amount of fear, not like afraid for your life kind of thing, but you have to acknowledge that something is more powerful than you and could affect your life if you don't award it the proper respect, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, he just left. He says, you know what, I'm not getting involved with this.
I'm out.
Good luck. After the blessing. Yeah, he's like, hey, if you want to do this stuff, then, you know, whatever. But he did ask for protection for them. You know?
Which is good,
you know,
yeah, and that's nice of him, yeah.
Yeah. You know what's cool? I found another segment. It was, like, from the local news station, I guess. A little clip, and it was, like, wild. It was better than the show, because what they actually happened was that all their equipment went dead. Fully charged cameras, recorders. It all went dead, and they were talking about that. And they started using their cell phones, and that went dead too. And then when they got the cameras working, they actually recorded fire coming out of the ground. And they showed that clip. And I'm like, whoa,
wow.
Those are flames coming right out the ground.
That's crazy.
And then there was one And then there was one part with one of the, I guess there were recorders or something. We're trying to record sounds or something, and it wasn't working. No, it was, that's what it was. They had a state-of-the-art, what do you call those flying things with the cameras?
The drones?
Man, I can't believe the name. The drones.
Drones?
They had,
yeah,
like the start. Yep, they had a state-of-the-art drone. It wouldn't work. It wouldn't
work. You're forgetting
work.
Everything tonight.
And then, I know, man, and see what I mean? And
getting
then
old,
what happened,
man,
was the, where, nah, you know what it is? Like, it's just the spooky story, you know? So
Yeah, that's what
so
it is.
So he picks,
sure,
up the drone. But check it out. Too much Kahoa back in the day. But he picks up the drone, right? He picks up the drone, right? And
yeah,
he says, man, what the hell? He says, what the hell? Well, he didn't say hell. I said, well, what the heck? He goes, if anyone's listening to us right now, please allow this drone to work, you know? And it worked. It started to work the minute he said that.
That's crazy.
And he didn't look like he was lying. It looked like he was legit, man, you know? Was,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
and
yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean,
well,
I confess, sure, I have, like, a interest in those, you know, paranormal type stuff too, as a folklorist, you know.
Right.
That's something,
yeah,
that I've always been interested in. So I watch a lot of the shows I watch. One of my favorite ones is Spooky Lou probably knows it. It's called Paranormal Caught on Camera. It's like just these instances of paranormal activity that occur in everyday life when people aren't – a lot of times when people aren't meaning to catch it, you know, like sometimes it'll be like ghost hunters and everything, but a lot of times it'll just be from like people's, you know, security cameras or drones or, you know, people just, their dash cams on their cars, or just people out just doing their thing, like not, you know, just living their lives. You know, they're out for a hike or, they're driving or they're at like a certain location or something. And then their phone camera just happens to catch something real weird. And some of them, you know, they're a little like, okay, this is, I'm not sure. This seems a little like they're stretching, like, oh, they say, oh, look, you can see a face here. I'm like, I don't see nothing, but whatever. But some of it is like, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's like, if it's a legit video and it's verified and it's credible. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know how somebody could fake that. And their reaction seems genuine. And, it's super bizarre. And what you mentioned before about like the equipment not working and everything, I mean, that's something I've heard over and over again whenever people go to investigate supposedly haunted or paranormal locations. That's one of the most common things that happens, as the equipment cuts out or, yeah, weird things happen with lights, weird things happen with electronics. That seems to be kind of the main MO of it. But I do remember there was one that was, it was near the Skinwalker Ranch area, and it was just, I think, some people you know, walking by. They were on, like, a road trip or something, and they stopped, and they're walking by, and they're in, like, this really, you know, desert area, because that's what it is. And then the guy's just, you know, capturing camera phone, or using his camera phone to capture some footage around him, and he sees this, like, weird-looking wolf like thing is, I guess, the best way I can describe it. Like, but it wasn't a wolf. It literally looked like it was crawling, and it was big, and it didn't look quite like a natural wolf would be in the wild. There was something definitely weird about it. And he tries to get closer to it, and it literally like climbs up these rocks and then like vanishes. And I'm like thinking, whoa, this is right near Skinwalker Ranch. And that could be like the dictionary definition of a skinwalker we just saw here, right? I mean, it looked like some weird otherworldly thing that was wolf-like, but moved almost in a more human-like way too. And to this day, they don't know what it is. And I just was like, okay, that was real crazy. I don't know what I would have done if I had seen that.
Well, you know, as a Bejique in a Taino way, you know, and also I've been taught many different indigenous traditions, spiritual traditions.
Right.
And it never fails. You know, past 25 years, I've been doing ceremonies at Inwood Hill Park, Manhattan, which the Lenape calls it Shirakapak. And it never fails when I bring people up there for a ceremony that night. Never fails. Whenever there's someone, there's always one or two people, and I'm not judging, you know, bring some negative energy to the circle. Either they come with suspicions or just, you know, negative attitude, whatever. Or maybe something against me, and it just, whatever. And it never fails. This happened at least three times. These creatures show up, you know. Sometimes the group sees it. Sometimes just that one person sees it, but they describe them
in Manhattan?
Yeah, Soraka Park, yeah, Manhattan. Inwood Hill Park, that's where I do the ceremonies at.
Okay.
And there's these creatures that they're like wolves, yeah, but more primal kind. And,
yeah.
And they chase the people. They chase the person, or they try to person. But no one can see it. No one sees it. And you see the person yelling, like, ah, oh, what is that? You know, then
right,
you got to calm down. And then and that's
but
when you know.
You've seen it,
world.
I guess, I'm assuming.
On occasion, maybe twice, I've seen the shadows. They call them shadow people, but these are more like four-leggeds, no, not people.
Right, right.
And,
not
wow, man,
shadow
it,
people.
It was,
yeah.
Right, right. Yeah. So then I tell the person, listen, calm down. It's all right. You're among friends. You know, there's a higher power here, and you know, just chill. You know, I mean, we got you. And then sometimes they just leave. You know, they just leave. And I remember one time, one person left, but they were so spooked. They went the opposite way, and the way they were going was the opposite of the exit. It was where
oh,
mostly you see a lot of the spirits, right?
Oh, God.
I'm like, uh-oh. I said, they went that way, but they didn't want to, you know, hear anything, so they left. 2 minutes later, they're coming back looking like they just saw a ghost.
Running.
Like, yep, so...
Oh,
people
boy.
Just don't respect, man. You got to respect, especially when you go into ceremonies, you know.
Absolutely. My friend, one of my best friends is, she's Mexican Aztec, and we both really like, you know, paranormal stuff and horror movies especially. And one of our common jokes is, like, we're always like, you ever notice in these horror movies, it's always the white people who, like, just want to come in and be like, oh, yo, this place is haunted, let's check it out. And there's always, like, a person of color, be it like a Native American or someone black or Latino, who's like, y'all, you probably shouldn't do that, you know. Like, they know what's up, right? They're like, you shouldn't be here, you shouldn't be like messing around with this stuff, you know, just FYI. And everybody always brushes them off. And then when everything goes to hell, it's like, oh, see, you know, that we're the ones who always know.
Yeah, you know what happens, they hold on a second. I just thought of something. Hold on. I got to get the song. Wait a minute. Hold on. Here we go. Let's do some old-fashioned radio, okay? Want to do some improv? Let's do some old-fashioned radio. You be the white person that's not afraid?
Right.
Okay, so maybe we're in the middle of a forest, all right? Hold on a second.
Okay.
Jeez, I can't find a song now. I can't find a good song. Hold on.
Okay,
the intern,
okay.
Man. Damn it, I need an intern. Okay, so okay, ready? So we're in the middle of a forest. I'm like the native guy, right? And then you're like the person who what? Whatever.
Okay.
Okay, ready?
I'll I got it. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Hold on a second. That's not the song I wanted. Wait.
It started out kind of creepy, and now it's like...
I know, it's there, right? Okay, here we go. It's from my Taino brother. I just want to tell you all, I know I came here against the advice of my grandmother, but please, you must leave this area. Natalie, we must leave.
I don't see what the big deal is. I mean, I have to get this footage for my documentary, and this place is perfect. It's so creepy. It's so weird. I mean, are we really going to let a bunch of old stories just keep us from doing the things we want?
All I know is, if you continue to walk that road, it's not good. not good. Some bad things are going to happen. I can't guarantee safety. What you think?
Right. Okay. Yeah. And step on a crack, break your mother's back. Right. So thanks anyway, Chief Geronimo or whatever your name is. We're going to go on and, you know, me and my boyfriend might actually have a pretty PG-13 sex scene out here at 1.2. So.
Now, I see that your boyfriend is African-American. Brother, be careful out there. I've seen many things. First person to die.
Who's that? Now I heard something. Rebecca, look, you might know the woman. Now I found her. What am I going to
do? Now I have to go back home and tell their parents what happened. Hey, that was a good split, man. Yo, we got to do that, man. Like, you know, do some, like, old-fashioned
movie. Yeah, that was good. That was good.
You have no fear at all.
No fear. And we're going to have sex out in the middle of a scary place because that's always has to happen in a horror movie.
See, but then your African-American brother would have got killed. See, they always, you know,
yeah,
they
probably.
Always kill the African-American dude. Yeah. They always kill him first. See what you did?
Oh, I should have added. I should have. And my virgin friend here might survive. Probably will.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man. So I'm clearly not a virgin, but my virgin friend here, she might be the last survivor.
Yo, this is too much, man. But let's work on a future skit, right? How about that?
Yeah, let's do it. I liked your, that was a
we'll
great, that stoic native voice. That was too good.
I know, I try not to be stereotypical, but I was trying to be like Hollywood, you know? Like,
yeah,
know.
Yeah. That's exactly how they would do it, absolutely. You nailed it.
Trying to be
you shouldn't
authentic
go
here
out
in the
there.
Radio, you know?
Your people don't understand.
That's right. So, listen, check it out, man. Today's topic is going to be a part one, okay? Because this is going to take a lot of parts to break this down. But check this out.
Yeah.
Let me throw it out, okay? And all you listeners out there who are listening, all you future listeners, check this out. You can always write us your comments at TainoRadio1491@gmail.com. Okay.
Oh,
people like Christopher Columbus wanted to know desperately how our ancestors thought about, you know, God, you know, their religion. And there was a dude called Ramon Pani. Wasn't a priest, though. He was a brother, lay brother. And he, I guess he was a smart guy, you know. So he was commissioned.
Was he Dominican monk? Or
No.
Yeah.
That's De La Casas. He was from
the Order of Jerome.
The Order of Jerome, but he wasn't a priest. He was like a lay brother, which that means he would probably, yeah, it was a religious order. Probably a scholar, you know. And
right.
So, yeah, he took the job. I guess he was forced to take the job, right? And then so he lived among our people, right? And
right.
Learn as much as he can. Good old Columbus, right? Want to know how to, he could divide the people, right? So
divide and conquer, as
they
say.
Man. You know? And you know a lot of religion deals with fear, right? Fear and this and that. So guess what? Supreme being or supreme beings, plural. Tell me
right.
What you know. What do you know? And then we can talk back and forth. And if anyone wants to call in later, after we do our sharing, and Natalie explains in her professional way, you can call 515-602-9792, 515-602-9792, if anyone's listening. Natalie, tell us what in your studies, first in your studies, one in your personal view, what are scholars saying about the supreme being or beings in a Taino traditional culture?
Right. So what I was always taught was that the two main ones that I was taught about were Yukahu and Atabe. And it's weird because at the, you know, a lot of the times in these non-Christian or pre-Christian or pagan cultures, and not just in throughout the Americas, but in Europe and throughout the world as well, there's a divine, there are two supreme beings. There's a divine feminine and a divine masculine, and they're kind of equals, you know, because the idea is that you need both, and you really do, obviously. Everything in the world, and to keep in good harmony, you need both working together, and no one is superior over the other, which is an idea that obviously, you know, changed greatly with Christianity, because that was very much a patriarchal type religion, as a lot of the Abrahamic religions are, with having kind of the most supreme being a masculine figure, and kind of really, you know, pressing down or pushing aside the sacred feminine. So what we see, though, with Taino culture is they're not a mated pair as they often are in a lot of other non-Christian polytheistic, meaning multiple gods or multiple spirits groups. They're mother and son, which is unusual, but it also makes sense at the same time. And what I've always heard is that Atabe is, she is the kind of the primordial goddess, as we were. She is, we could equate her to being like the earth mother, because that is what she is. She's fertility. She gives birth to everything, to all life. And that is what an earth mother, by definition, in religious studies is. And it is, Yukahu comes from her, right? He is her son. She has no mate, really, no counterpart, that is, at least in that sense, pardon me. But at the same time, what I was always told was Yukahu, even though it was her son, he was sort of her masculine counterpart at the same time, even though they weren't mates in terms of, you know, husband and wife or mated pair, like in a lot of other cultures. They were still equally powerful and equally important, and you needed both for creation and for maintenance of the balance of the universe. You need the masculine energy and you need the feminine energy, right? And what that often equates to, exactly, in a lot of these non-Christian cultures is, like I said, I gave you the concept of the earth mother before, because the earth is greatly associated with fertility, which again, women are greatly associated with, because everything, you know, actual birth does come from women and female, right, bodies. But something needs to impregnate that earth mother, right? And in a lot of cultures, that entity is associated with the sun, because it is the sun that is kind of the giver of life. It is the sun that provides life to crops to grow, for animals to eat, and then we eat those animals. So that sun is often kind of associated with a divine masculine energy, being that it or he, right, impregnates the earth mother, and together they give birth to all life. And that is why in a lot of indigenous cultures you'll hear the term, you know, creator. I mean, and every culture calls him something different, whether it's Wankantanka or, you know, various other names throughout various indigenous cultures. But it usually kind of always translates to, at least in basic terms, creator. And it's an entity that is associated with the sun, right? Because the sun is like kind of the all-father, always looking down on us and watching over us, and also fertilizing the earth mother and providing her with life, right? And so with Taino culture, it's slightly different, but I do feel that it still kind of follows in that same path. And as we were talking about before, Atabe is very associated, like even in the way she's depicted, she's like the perfect image of femininity and fertility. You know, her breasts are out. She's got her legs spread, a very prominent vagina, which is what I've always also found to be kind of symbolic of, it looks and is shaped sort of like a cave. And in a lot of Taino folklore, it's believed that we came from caves, right? That was the beginning of all life. We came from this kind of more underground, darker place. And so I always thought that was kind of sort of unintentional symbolism there. And she's not the only, like I think I was mentioning this at last week's show, there are lots of feminine goddess and sacred feminine entities and earth mothers that are all depicted in a similar way with their sex very prominently displayed, particularly the vagina, the open vagina, because that is where life starts, right? That is where all life begins,
right.
is a woman's vagina. And there is, I think, a strong association with that and the beginning of creation itself.
Well, you know what's interesting? I had you coming out of Casibahagua in the beginning of the show, remember? Hello, can you hear me?
Did I lose you?
Can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you now.
Wow, we got some issues here with the mic. Oh, man. See? What did we speak about before?
Exactly.
What's that ranch called again?
Skinwalker Ranch. Man.
Wow. It's funny, I was saying some things and you didn't hear me, but, oh, man. It's
oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know why I didn't. Yeah, it just, like, cut out, but I'm guessing you heard me.
Let me see. Sound check. So, yeah, you know, I was going to say that in the beginning of the show, I had you coming out of Casibahagua. So it's funny how you used to say that about that. It looks like a cave, right? The vagina.
Right, exactly.
So let me tell you something right now. Let me ask you a quick question, man. Just listening to you. Doesn't it sound like incest a lot there? The mother and the son? Because, you know, Yokahu, right? Traditionally, the one that fertilizes.
Right.
The crops, the yucca. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, it could be associated with that way, but, you know, it's we have to keep in mind that at least in a lot of cultures, especially in earlier times, incest, quote-unquote, wasn't super taboo, and it wasn't unheard of in real life either. You know, a lot of that comes to mind is like the ancient Egyptians and a lot of other people of the Western world, particularly to keep, you know, especially if it was a family with in power, pharaohs and noblemen to keep the family bloodline pure. A lot of people married siblings and cousins and pretty much all European royals, even all the way down to now. If they marry within the royal, any European royal bloodline, chances are they're probably related by some degree. I mean, nowadays, yeah, exactly. Nowadays, you have a lot of them obviously breaking that because it's taboo now, right? I mean, nobody wants to be married to their cousin, even if it's their sixth cousin twice removed. It's still weird,
sure.
Right? And it can cause some health problems, as we know now, but it wasn't weird back in the day. And back in the day, even for smaller groups of people, it wasn't necessarily weird either because, again, people were living in small groups and death was not uncommon due to, you know, disease or injury. And sometimes even for sort of as just to keep property or status within the family, sometimes it was more prudent to marry within your own family to some degree, at least, not maybe necessarily mother, son, or sister, brother, what have you, but it wasn't that out of the ordinary. And in what I've learned in a lot of indigenous cultures is there was not necessarily sibling marriage a lot of the time, but cousin marriage taking place. And there was even a weird concept I learned about called parallel cousins and cross cousins, meaning, so if your mother had a sister and she had children, you couldn't marry any of them because they were your parallel cousins. But if your mother had a brother and he had children, you could marry them because they were your cross cousins. So as long as the biological aunt or uncle, it seemed like, wasn't the same sex as the parents of yours that they were related to, that made it okay because somehow they were distant enough in that sense. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, obviously, from a biological standpoint. You guys, the relation is the same, but it was somehow somebody put that system together and found it acceptable. So, you know, we look at it now and it's like, ooh, that's weird. But, I mean, if we take it in the context of the time and of also think about these are the only, for a while, the only two beings really in existence, you know, only two supreme deities in existence at the time. It's not super strange in that sense. I mean, it is still because, yeah, that we say that's incest now, of course. But at the same time, it's like it was what needed to be done to continue the cycle of life, you know,
despite the
relation. A masculine energy was needed, and that was all that was around. I mean, it was Yukahu and Natabe. So if they wanted to continue their line and create more life, create more beings like themselves, that's what they had to do, right? And, you know,
right.
People always make the metaphor like, oh, if there were only two people left on Earth, like they would obviously, you know, you would expect them to try to procreate, right? Despite
right.
who they were, no matter who they were, how different they were, or even if they maybe were related, it's just kind of, I mean... even if you look at the Bible, we talk about Adam and Eve, and they had according to the Bible, only two sons, right? Cain and Abel. And yet Cain and Abel somehow had children of their own. So who mothered their children if the only people alive supposedly at the time were their parents?
Right.
And obviously the Bible doesn't get into detail about that, but then that begs the question too. Well, technically, the only woman was Eve, right? So did they have sex with their mom? So again, it's not even unique to non-Christian culture, right? I mean, this idea of what we would call now incest is everywhere. And it did not hold that same status of being taboo or, you know, looked down upon as it does now.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, good. I got it working now. Well, if you look at it logically, right? If
right.
you have a lineal kind of approach to this whole thing of the God question, did God create one woman? Did God create one man? A first pair, you know? And it's true.
Right.
If the children come out males, how is this going to be a procreation going on? It has to be through the mother, right?
Right. I mean,
so,
nobody ever says it,
so
but
these,
I mean.
Right. So I can see the ancient people asking these same questions. Wait a minute. We have one mom in the whole world or in our world?
Right.
There's different moms. Then we ask the question now, like, why? No, did God create one couple only or many couples? So.
Right. Because logically.
And yet they're cousins.
Yeah. And in a lot of creation stories, they do start with just one couple, right? So, again, if thinking logistically, one couple can only mean one set of children. And everyone says, well, all people then or a whole family tree or pantheon of beings developed from them, there had to be some inner sibling marriage at least, right? Because if you just have one set of siblings first, how are they going to have children unless they marry their own siblings? And we see that in, obviously, in ancient Greek mythology. You know, all the original Olympian gods were siblings who intermarried. In ancient Egyptian mythology, same thing.
Sumerian, a lot of Nordic mythology as well. Siblings became husband and wife. And so, yeah, when you want to stick with that idea of everybody descending from a single pair of beings, it's just sort of kind of a given, right, that there was some incest
right.
at one point.
Well, here's the thing. This is the preamble of La Relación of Fray Ramón Pané, The Relation, La Relación, The Antiquities, The Stories of Antiquities.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he says, what he found out. This is right before chapter one. Hold on. Let me get my spectacles. I can't see. Wait, where are they? I can't find them.
You are getting old.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Jesus.
You're forgetting things.
Hold on.
I think the hearing issues might be you just can't hear me. You need a hearing aid, maybe.
Oh, my God. Wait a minute.
He's like, oh, can you
hold
hear
on.
Me? You
Second.
Act like, my technology screwed up. Yeah, right. It's not a cord, just can't hear shit.
That's for another show, right? No, wait a minute. Okay, ready? Well, check this out. Yeah, he's from the Order of St. Jerome. By order of the Lord Admiral Viceroy and Governor of the Islands and Mainland of the Indies, would have been able to learn concerning the beliefs and idolatry of the Indians. How dare he? And the manner in which they worship their gods, small g. Look at that. So I guess he was biased, right?
Right, a little bit.
So, yeah. So he says that each one adores the idols, or semis, as they call them. And they all mm-hmm. have them in their house in a special way with some special rites. There you go. That's cool. That's very good, insightful stuff. Now, they believe that there's an immortal being in the sky who none can see and who has a mother but no beginning. I just want to stop there for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot told right there. So they're immortal, in the sky. No one can see him, right? And he has
right.
a mother. Wait a second. Hold on.
Right.
I'm looking at the. I'm looking at the language here. Okay, he doesn't mention the sex. I'm sorry. So they believe that there is an immortal being in the sky whom none can see, who has a mother, but no beginning. I guess assume the beginning is the father? He has no beginning?
Yeah, I'm assuming, no birth or something. I don't know.
So whoever, and his mother mentions Atabe.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a mother, but no beginning. So is he equal to the mother?
I think so. I mean, that's what I was always taught, that Yukahu
right.
was equal to Atabe, even though he technically was, as we would say, we would call it her son, but he was her equal, and that he was the masculine counterpart to her feminine power, right?
Yeah.
As was
yeah,
needed.
But, yep.
But yeah, I still have the sense, though, right? And from what it sounds like, Atabe is older, right? She's a more primordial goddess. I mean,
mm-hmm.
not that Yukahu's not as well, but I still think she came first because obviously she would have to for Yukahu to be born.
Right.
So I feel like there's still the sense, even though they're technically equal, she's still his elder. She's been around more, so that. Especially in indigenous culture, that awards her some status right there, you know, just being
right.
the older one, I think.
Well, here's the thing. They say they believe that there is an immortal being, a being. They didn't say God, though, but he said being.
Right, right.
So that's crucial to understand the language, too. It said being. He didn't say God. In the sky,
yeah, yeah.
who none can see and who has a mother but no beginning. So I guess, yeah, there's no beginning. There's no dad. There's
Which
no father,
doesn't
right?
sound a lot different from either, if you're looking at it in a Christian context, God himself
right.
or Jesus
mm-hmm.
even, because Jesus has a mother right? But technically mm-hmm. no mortal father, at least no, you know, his father is a supreme, a non-physical entity, right? So, right. I mean, that's the parallel I see right there. And it's funny that in we all look to the sky, right? When we talk about these supreme beings, like mm-hmm. every culture almost associates them with being above us in some way. You rarely hear people say, oh, the major supreme beings live underneath us or in the ground or in, you know, the rocks or something. I mean, the water, there still could be supreme, like powerful beings there, but the supreme one, it seems like it's always associated with the sky and being both physically above us and then in that sense, metaphorically above us, right?
Right. Well, how about this? It says, okay, now we're getting into the sex here, right? They call him Yokahu, okay? They call him mm-hmm. Yokahu Bagua Marakoti and his mother Atavish. He spells it as Atavish. Yen Mau Huacar, Apito, and Suimako. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And then Mamuna later on, so which is 5 different names. Wait, hold on. Can they call him Yokahu? Okay. I write only of, okay, so I mean, I'll just stop there. So they call him Yokahu Bawa Marakoti and his mother Atavish, Yan Maguakar, Apito, Suimako, and Mamuna. Okay, so there we go. So he has a sex. He's a him. He's a he.
Right.
So,
right.
So we got Yokahu.
And that's,
yeah.
Right.
Tell me, yes, what happened?
No, I was just saying, and you know, a lot of people like to say that God, the Christian God, is a kind of beyond sex and gender supreme being, right? But we always, and have always referred to him as him, right? There's never been any mm-hmm. question about that.
Right. Now, here's what I'm looking at. See, I'm an old theologian. You know, I study the biblical side, the
right,
biblical
right.
studies.
You know that.
You got to break
yeah.
the language down, the language. So this is what Panay is breaking down. He's immortal. An immortal being. Doesn't say God, though, right? It says immortal.
Mm-hmm.
No one can see him, so he's invisible. He has a mother, no beginning, and he has 3 names, Yokahu, Bagua, Marakoti. So, now one of my favorite scholars is Bartolomé de las Casas, who, before his death, he tried to write down as much as he could about our people.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
De las Casas, yeah, I mean, it's, he wrote so much, but briefly he wrote that he believes that our ancestors saw God as the true and single God. So now he's saying single. Immortal, invisible, has no beginning, and he lives in heaven. That's the Casas language. He lives in heaven.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And he really didn't know his name, this God's name. So in his studies, he really didn't get to the name of Yokahu Bagua Marakoti. But he did hear that the natives will call this true and single God as Yokahu Guama. You know, so.
Which, yeah,
he
makes
doesn't
sense.
Mention Atabe. But he doesn't mention Atabe. He just mentioned Yokahu Guama.
Which is bizarre,
a lot of
right?
People
yeah.
Saying. So it seems like the people he was talking to, our ancestors, the majority of them were saying Yokahu Guama, not Atabe. So that kind of, mm-hmm. for me, culturally, socially, that's raising some questions. Like, why didn't they mention Atabe?
I wonder if it's because he was trying, mm-hmm. yeah, I feel like he might have been trying to relate it more to Christianity, you know, because when we try to describe something that is foreign to us, we try to, what's the first thing we do? We try to relate it to something we're familiar with, right? Like, that's kind of human nature. Like, if someone explains to you a concept that you don't know, you say, oh, so it's kind of like the equivalent of our ... right? So I'm wondering if he
right.
purposely was kind of equating it or equating it as much as he could, at least, to his own understanding of divinity and everything, and therefore left out the parts about Atabe or the sacred feminine. You know, obviously I don't know for sure, but it seems strange, right? That I feel like maybe these accounts aren't including everything. It may have been, you know, crop picked down to the things he felt would be most probably the most well received, and obviously this is going to a Christian audience and everything. What's going to be most well received is what's going to be what they can relate to the most.
Right, exactly. But if Atabe was more popular, wouldn't you hear that more? The Atabe word? Wouldn't you hear that more?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It is strange that he doesn't mention it at all. And I'm wondering, that's why I said I'm wondering if maybe he did and chose to exclude it, or was he with a particular maybe community of Taino people? Because obviously not everybody worships in exactly the same way, right? I mean, there's you know, a general Taino culture and spirituality and stuff, but between islands, between groups, between bands, between caciques, things are gonna vary slightly. So maybe it could be we could, you know, chalk it up to he was with a community that seemed to focus more on Yukahu than Atabe, right? I mean, that could be possible depending on where exactly he was.
And you know, Ramon Panay even writes it in his writing. He's just the last sentence in this paragraph was, I have no clue, well, I'm paraphrasing now, that he doesn't know about the other islands, just what he knows in Hispaniola, as he called it.
Right.
And so there's probably what other terms, but...
Yeah, like, and that, I mean, that excludes Buriguen, that excludes Cuba, that excludes, like, a lot of Taino people, right? So, you know, I mean, depending on where he was in Hispaniola and what group he was with, it's not completely surprising that it might be something that different from what we associate now, right? Because I feel like Atabe is very big in Buriguen, and also even in Cuba, where my ancestors are from. But maybe at the time and in the place he was in, even the particular location or particular chiefdom within Hispaniola, it was different, you know, to what we look at today in the more general term concept of Taino spirituality.
And you know what's cool? Have you read the works of Jose J. Aron, the Spaniard linguist?
Hang on. I think it's not who I was thinking of.
He was from Yale. No, he's from Yale University. He was one of the guys that broke the code. You know, what does your... Because see, what I've read from him, De La Casas and Pané really didn't focus much on the translation of the words.
Mm-hmm.
So Aaron, with his linguists and tools, and also he studied the Arawakan language in South America, he decoded the words, man. Check this out. He says that Yoka Hu Guama, right? Yoka refers to the Yuka, right? Yuka. And then, hold on a second, or Yuka spirit, the cassava giver, okay? And also he related that to the immortal, invisible being. But then he mentions about Bagua, the Bagua. So Yokahu, Bagua, and that's ocean or water. You know what it is?
Right.
The sea, I should say. Bagua is his name for the sea. And then he gets into the Arawak, Marocoti. It's a negative prefix of ma, which in the Arawakan tongue means without or lacking. Orocoti in the Taino refers, in both Carib and Locono word, means grandfather, without grandfather. Okay?
So ma.
Orocoti, without grandfather, is equivalent, as Wapane explained, who has a mother but no beginning. So beginning,
right,
in this context, refers to grandfather. Interesting.
Right.
And then he
heritage.
Says in Yoka, right. So in Yokahu Guama, in Locono is Guama, which means Lord. So the lord of the cassava, who has no grandfather and is of the water. Now, what do you now?
So
when I hear water of the sea, I'm thinking of Deminon, the four brothers, and the broken gore, right? So there's a lot.
Yes, what we talked about with the creation myth, right?
So, yeah. Oh, he also mentions in his work that the Taino people refer to Columbus as the Guamaquina of the Christians. So Guama is the Lord, so Lord of the Christians.
Lord of
the Christians.
Lord,
the great Lord. That's how they refer to Columbus, Guamaquina.
How wrong they were, right?
Let me see. And that's right. And then they say,
imagine
King
Ferdinand and hearing about that.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, right? I know that when he probably brought the slaves to Spain, they were probably like, yeah, don't call me Guamaquina.
yeah, don't call me Lord here.
Yeah. So basically, what's his name? Aron, the late scholar Aron, the way he translates Yokahu Bagua Marakoti and Yokahu Wama is spirit of the cassava and the sea, being without male ancestor, and the Lord cassava giver. And we know those three pointers represent Yokahu, and they will bury them. And Yokahu would fertilize the ground, right, the soil, so the yuca can grow.
Right. Right.
So at home, he was like a champion of translating linguistically these terms.
Yeah,
so,
and it's amazing how much linguistics can tell you, right?
Yeah. But here's the thing, man. Check it out. Ready for this? Anyone who wants to call in, the number is 515-602-9792. The three-pointers sent me. It's found all over the islands. It's found in museums. Great artwork. It was buried underneath the yuca root. Yokahu with the big eyes and the big mouth, with the hands and feet crawling in the ground, fertilizing the ground. So he's the sun, right? He's in the mother. He's inside the soil of the earth mother, fertilizing the mother. That sounds like incest to me. Now, I don't know.
I'm
being scandalized. I'm scandalized now.
Right. But again, like if we take it into the, you know, everything is about context, right? And obviously to us, you know, nowadays that sounds like, oh my God, what incest, you know, it's not a good thing, right? But if we just take it back to, again, that time and that context and of, you know, survival was everything, right? So you married and you were mated with or reproduced with who was around. And if there was, you know, you're living in, say, a small, like, yukayeke with only, you know, maybe 30 people, unless you go and marry outside of your yukayeke, which I'm not saying people didn't do. I'm sure they did. A lot of people probably married within the yukayeke, which means there's some degree of relation, most likely, right? If we factor in the concepts of polygamy, having multiple wives or multiple partners, which means there's multiple children who are half siblings. So it's hard to like displace the modern reaction to the idea of incest, but I think, you know, at the time and for the people who, you know, were telling these stories, it wasn't something that was so absurd to them. And again, I relate it all back to what people can understand, like Christianity and everything. It's so God is supposedly, right, the all father of everybody, yet he impregnated Mary, right? And so wouldn't that technically make her his daughter? Wouldn't that make that incest to some degree? The all father is impregnating one of his own children, to bear his son. You know, like when you
wait, watch your mouth there. Watch your mouth.
I'm not saying you're right. You, yeah, like that would rub people the wrong way, right? But it's not like it's obviously we take it that way, but if you associate, you know, God is the father of all, and especially back then, he's the father of all these early people, and there's only so many of them. So what was Mary to him? Was she a relation? Was she, I mean, obviously they weren't an equal mated pair, like a lot of these primordial beings. She was mortal, right? So, you know, what was their relation? I always just think that, yeah. Like, you got to put it into the context of the time before you go saying, like, people saying, oh, and that's incest and that's bad and, you know, shame on them kind of thing.
Right.
And even I think for Europe at the time, like, again, the all royals and nobles were related. So it just wasn't viewed the same way, I don't think.
You know what's crazy? You just made me remember something. When I was doing my studies, right, for when I first started doing the studies on Yokahud, you know, the Semis, you know, when I first got into the movement, I kind of, I guess I suppressed it, but now that I'm researching about, you know, the God question and the Taino mythology, you know, not mythology, the worldview, there was a Semi, right, that has typical Yokahud imagery. With the open mouth, the large eyes,
right.
He's crawling, the feet, the hands, he's digging. But on top of him, right, and over his head, it looks like there's a frog or a head of a fish or a frog. For me, it looks like a frog with the big eyes literally over his head, you know, over his head. So, and you know, a lot of people refer to the Atabe as, you know, the frog woman. Right.
Right. And
yeah,
and we've seen that image of her with the
So Aarón studied that semi in his works. How there's Yokahud and then there's this frog on top of him. Literally on top of him, on top of his head. Looks like he has a hat. And but it's a frog.
Okay, I think I'm looking at what you're talking about right now. I just Googled
it. Is that Atabe?
I see it.
Is that Atabe?
You know, I think it could be because remember what we were talking about the other day with the way Atabe is depicted, that classic image of her in that like squatting position with the
exactly.
bent legs and like the amphibian looking feet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think of that in two ways. I think of it in one way in that that's a traditional woman's birthing position. And we talk about, you know, how she's associated with fertility, with birth. And back in the day, especially among indigenous groups, women gave birth squatting. You know, I mean, nowadays they do it on their backs. And the only reason for that is in the Western world is that's what doctors make them do so they can see everything better and have better access. But even medical science has shown that it's better for women to squat because then gravity helps, you know, the baby come down and the birth process is a lot easier because that's how it's meant to be. So I kind of, I take it in two ways. I take it as her being in this kind of traditional women's birthing position just to reemphasize that idea of fertility. But yeah, if you look at her legs and her feet, the way they're bent, like a front, you know, she's sitting, like if you just look at her bottom half without looking at the mid and top half of her head and torso, it looks like a frog to me. Even the feet look amphibious to me, like webbed or something.
Now it's funny because in Aarón, in his studies, he says when you look at it from above, right, it's he referred to it as a reptilian. Now, I've said this before on Taino Radio, you know, reptilian beings, star people,
lizard people.
Reptilian, again, the reptilian influence shows up.
Right.
That's for another show, though.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, like I said, I think it's a common trend to kind of associate divine beings in all human cultures with certain animals, right? Because to a lot of pre-monotheistic people, animals were divine, right? They were these non-human entities of nature that could greatly affect the survival of the people around them and could greatly influence the environment as well. For example, you know, you don't have enough, say, deer to hunt, you're going to starve, right? Or you don't have enough fish to catch, you're going to starve. You don't have certain animals that produce skin and wool, you're not going to have clothing. And then you would see, they would see these powerful predators, I think a lot of the time, like, how they often hunted in the same way people did. And they consider them like an equal to some degree, but more powerful in that they're not reliant on tools or anything. They're able to hunt and to survive just with what they were born with. Right. So I think the idea of you mentioned lizards specifically or reptiles specifically, that's one thing for sure. But I always feel like there's definitely is we equate, or ancient cultures at least would equate, a lot of divine beings with animal characteristics, because I think they saw a lot of the time certain animals as representations of a certain divine being or reincarnations of a certain divine being, images of them, messengers of them, like a lot of gods and goddesses, they say, you know, certain animals are associated with them. Again, I go back to Egypt and all their depictions of gods with animal heads or being associated with particular animals, Greco-Roman mythology as well. Hera is associated with the peacock. Neptune is associated with horses. It's pretty universal. I think that says something.
I'm glad you
about
said
how
that.
We, right.
But why is Yokahu represented as a human? He has a face like a human. He has big eyes, big mouth, a nose like a human.
I see that, but then you know what I also noticed with him is he's. Like when he's depicted in that, like that semi, that triangular three pointed shape, right? To me, it almost looks like a star or some non-human thing, either a star with those three points, or we were talking about symbolism last week and the different symbols, like, you know, primordial and ancient symbols of male and female. And I mentioned how the primordial symbol for male is that triangle, right? That pointed with the blade at the top. They call it the blade with the point at the top and the two points at the bottom, that's associated with masculinity. And it's also phallic to some degree, right? Whereas if it were reversed and was more that, that womb shape, that upside down triangle, that would be more feminine. But look at that representation of Yokahu. It's always that blade, three-pointed, with the point up, you know, the point upward of the triangle at the very top. So I think that speaks a lot to that ancient representation and that association with that blade symbol of being masculine, of being powerful, of being phallic. And also, again, he doesn't look superhuman. I mean, like, aside from the face, the shape and everything never struck me as something superhuman, you know? I mean, they never show him really with body parts to some, like this three-pointed semi is the most common depiction of him, right?
Well, they show the arms, like he's digging, and with the feet that he's pushing, whatever. It's like
right,
movement.
But he's
There's
like,
movement,
he's
you know?
Shaped weird, right? It's yeah. Not like a typical idol of a anatomically correct human.
hey, check it out. You want to take I know this is heavy stuff, man. Let's take a little break. Do you know how we're going to do this? Let's go back to old-time radio. Let's do a skit. Let's do a skit, all right?
Okay.
Just like we started the show. So say we're a young couple, right? We just got connected to our Taino roots, and we're looking into stuff, you know. So right now we're in the middle of the Yunque. We just took a little hike. We're a little lost now,
oh,
though,
boy.
And it's getting dark. It's getting dark. The sun is down. It's getting dark. And they told us not to leave the road, but we did because we're into our Taino culture, okay? So
right.
So let's do this, all right? Ready? Yo, you didn't kill me before. Let's see if we can do this, all right? All right,
ready?
So we're
going to start?
Yeah, we're going to be, yeah, follow my lead. We're going to be in the Yunque, in the middle of the Yunque. It's already getting really dark. Ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Action. Hey, honey, I don't understand. I told you we should have gone down the hill. Now, I don't know. I don't know how to get out of here. It's getting dark. What are we going to do now?
I don't know, babe. I mean, I was looking at my, I had signal before on my phone, my GPS, but now I don't know where we are. And my abuela, she always told me not to come out too late at night around here because she said there could be like Siwapa or something around here. We're not supposed to be here, I don't think. What should we do?
Siwapa? Wait a minute. That's Google and Mike. Wait a minute. You know, it was your idea to come up here. You know, you talking about the Taino stuff, and I just wanted to take a walk.
I didn't think you would want to stay so long and get us lost. You're the man. You're supposed to know directions.
Wait a minute. Don't put this on me. Wait, hold on. I just saw something on the ground. Wait a minute.
No, you did not.
It's
stop
like
playing.
It's like pointy. Hold on. Damn, I can't see. Let me
stop
get your cell
playing,
phone.
Babe.
Get the
you're trying
light.
To scare me. I'm not into it.
No, hold on. Oh, there it is. I got it. This
what
is
it?
Weird.
Oh my God.
It looks like a little mountain. It has big eyes, big mouth. This is weird. What? Wait a minute.
Yo.
I don't know what this is. This is a semi. I remember reading
no
books about the semi. Yeah,
no
look at
way.
That. Look.
Oh my God.
It. That's
Holy
a blessing,
shit.
Man. That's a blessing.
I don't
That's
know, babe. I'm
blessing.
Kind of scared. What if someone's messing with us or something?
Wait a minute. Hold on. I just saw something else. Hey, hold on to it.
No, you didn't. Please stop.
I just
stop.
Saw
oh
something
my God.
Else. It's a little sign. Wait, what? This is weird. A little sign. What?
Oh,
it
God.
Says,
oh, God. Stay
beware.
Close, please. Don't walk away from me.
No, it's all right. I'm here. Don't worry. Just don't drop
oh
it.
God.
Don't drop that same.
No, I'm not.
We can sell it on eBay. We can sell it on eBay. Make a lot of money.
No, we can't all do right, that. Didn't you all ever
this
talk to
least,
you about
the meme? It's at least $5,000. Hold on. Let me see. It says
oh
beware
God, no. oh
of
God.
The spooky. Beware. Wait, I can't. Damn it, I can't read.
No.
Where's my glasses? What? Beware of spooky. Spooky what? Spooky.
Put your light on it.
Beware of spooky chupacabra. What the hell?
Oh
what
my
is that
God,
all
no
about?
Me diga. No. Stop
what?
Playing.
Beware of chupacabra. What the hell?
Who's that? I know I heard something.
Dia from Paranormal from Spooky Moon Show. Is this true?
Oh my God, you're crazy, bro. I did not expect to be on your show. I was just listening and getting this education with Spooky Moon. Yeah. Put me on the spot, bro. How you
oh
guys doing?
Oh my God, I knew something was bad. It was a bad idea.
I am the chupacabra.
Oh my God. That's why you don't walk in the yonke at night.
I'm just hanging out on
here. I know, you were kind of scared. You were kind of scared. You're getting close there, right?
I know. I'm glad I ran into you guys. So, let's continue on the path. What did you find?
That was a sign from the future.
Sign to the future.
So, Lou, since you're the first caller, tell us what's going on. What do you think about this sacred being or supreme being talk of our ancestors?
Unfortunately, I didn't get enough of it because I got out of work late. I'm in a different time zone.
Right.
It was
he's in the future.
You guys are in the future. I'm in the past.
Oh, okay. Oh, shit. That's even scarier.
Oh, shit. You're right.
3 hours behind.
Do you have Do you have cars where you are?
Oh, that's yeah. We do. We have Coca-Cola there, but yeah. No, unfortunately, I missed most of it. I'll tell you this one time. I'm very intrigued by what I was listening, and I want to educate myself more on this. Explain to me a little bit, like what superpowers or what beings that you were saying? Because I got the part where you were saying that there were lizards involved or different kinds of mythology.
Of course,
faces.
That's when he tuned in, the lizard people are.
No.
The reptilians.
I also heard
the reptilians.
I heard the incest going on. I just, you know.
I was not a thought he keeps, like, keeps bringing that up. Like, he's, like, fascinated by
the pinky stuff.
No, think about it.
God.
Go ahead, Natalie. Don't be scared.
Okay. No, I was just saying, Sana Cody was mentioning how the idea that, you know, Yukahu is sort of the fertilizer of Atave. He's the sacred masculine. She's the sacred feminine, but she's technically his mother. So this is incestuous, you know, and everybody, of course, always freaks out about that, right? And I was just kind of saying, well, you got to put it into context, you know, at the time among
I heard
people.
That part.
Oh, you heard that
I
part.
I heard
okay,
that
good.
Part. Yeah, I heard all of that. And that's another thing,
okay.
Right? You were talking about Jesus or something, but look at it from another point of view.
Oh, you heard my blasphemy? No.
No, but listen, I'm going to add to that blasphemy. What about Adam and Eve? If they had children, their sisters and brothers were procreating.
What about who did you say?
Adam and Eve.
Yeah, we did mention that. Yeah, I said that we had. Yeah, you probably came on later, but I said the same thing. I said, well, think about Adam and Eve. You know, they only had two sons, right? So, who mothered their children? Because technically, the only woman alive was Eve, their mom, right?
Correct. No, I get it. I heard some of that. I guess I didn't understand that, but yeah, I mean, it is weird. But the truth is, I mean. I'm sure back in the day that happened often. I don't know. I'm glad it's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, I think archaeological and anthropological evidence at least shows it definitely did among, you know, human beings and especially more ancient human beings. Because, again, if you're living in a small population, in small groups, there's a greater chance, obviously, of being interrelated to some people, at least by some degree. I also mentioned, you know, obviously royalty and nobility were often related because the idea was to keep the power within the bloodline, of course.
That's right.
Yeah, so I mentioned, you know, ancient Egypt. I mentioned how all the European monarchy has all been related to some degree. Up until probably like this generation, because a lot of them have finally started marrying outside of the royal bloodlines of Europe. But, you know, you look back at all of that and yeah, incest was not taboo, I guess was my point. You know, it wasn't something like it is today. It was more that was the way to not only survive, but ensure the survival of a particular family that was looking out for its own best interests.
Correct. I know I've heard that. I don't know, you want to put a paranormal spin on that because we were bringing up the lizard people. Don't they say that they're also they're actually lizard people? Have you ever heard that theory?
Oh yeah, that's what we were talking about. Like I've heard. Like I mean, that's been in the paranormal sphere for a while. I think you know, there's grays, there's shadow people, and there's lizard people, right?
So yeah, but what I'm saying is that they say a lot of royalty. They all have that rare blood. It's almost right.
Right.
Like, they have that with the. I think that's where the blue blood term comes from. You know, we know it's blue blood, but
right.
They
yeah.
Say that a lot of a lot of those people are really descendants, but they're really lizard people.
That would explain a lot of things.
It would.
When you go to the islands, all you see is lizards, little lizards. When you go to the islands, all you see is little lizards.
You do see little lizards. And big lizards now, at least in Puerto Rico, and all those giant iguanas took over.
Yeah, they're in Florida, too.
That's invasive.
Yeah, they are invasive.
You know what,
they weren't there, just... Go ahead.
You know what Yare told me about that, Dr. Yare? About those giant lizards that you find? Back in the 80s, mid-80s, there was a shipment of these lizards in a truck that was going to a pet shop, right? Or pet shops. And in, you know, those notorious hills, the truck probably went really fast and it went over the cliff and it killed the driver and everything. That was in the 80s. And all those lizards, they ended up in that rainforest. And like, 20, 30 years later, they're like, they took over the island. And they hired people, the farmers, they hired people to kill them because they're invasive. They kill plants. They eat your crops. They're from Panama.
Right.
Iguanas? Oh, they are.
No, the huge iguanas. There's these huge iguanas that are invasive to Puerto Rico. They're all over the island now, and they eat crops. They eat everything.
They eat the coquis.
They have a hunt.
I heard they eat the coquis, the baby
eggs,
the coquis too. Yeah, that's what I've heard.
I mean, I've seen people run over them on purpose because they're like, they consider them super evil.
They do because they're killing the coquis off, and they're everywhere, and they're a nuisance out there. I heard that people are eating them now too.
Yeah, there's a dude over there, I think, in Cabo. I forget where. Damn, where is it? Nagual? That he makes the pinchos out of lizards, those giant lizards.
That's what I've heard. That's what
I've
heard. Tastes like chicken.
Was that?
Yeah, I want to get like some empanadas made with lizard meat.
Little sofrito.
Don't laugh, man. The original sancocho was not, you know, chicken or beef. It was lizards.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't have been. Those animals weren't indigenous to that area, right? There was no pork. There was no pigs were invasive from Europe. Caused a lot of the same problems too, because they eat everything. They would eat crops. They eat all sorts of stuff.
They have fish. They'll put the fish. That's invasive,
man.
They
didn't have
chicken
back then.
No chickens. They had no gallinas, bro.
Yeah, it would have been like a bird, but not that, right?
Yeah, they have parrots, parrot birds. They would use parrot meat. You know the parrot meat? They would use parrot meat. The children was the ones that hunted them, the parrots. They would do traps.
Right.
But, hey, check it out. I found something interesting here. It's called Taíno Mythology, Notes on the Supreme Being by José Arun. And this is the last paragraph in his article. 1980, Yale University. Ready for this? This guy makes sense, man. Check this out. We may say that the Supreme Being of the Taínos was not a philandering Don Juan, like Jupiter, nor a demanding, vindictive judge like Jehovah, nor where's my glasses? Hold on, I can't read.
Oh God, again.
or an abstinent warrior like Odin. Oh, hold on. Created by a people living almost paradise. Damn, I can't read, man.
Even
my glasses
parallel.
Are not. No, even my glasses not helping me.
Yeah, I told you. You're getting old. You might need some.
Okay, I gotta get some light here. You know what? No. Is that I'm in the dark. So you know, people living in the islands without poisonous reptiles, or fierce beasts. Without harsh winters or oppressive summers, without deserts, without chilling heights, in which a benign nature offered an abundant, hold on, of birds and fish and fertile land. Yokahu Pawamanokoti was, as were his creators, interesting, as were his creators, peaceful and kind, closely tied to the ecology of the islands. His functions were those of a generous, sustaining being, ruling the creative forces of the land and sea. Seen in this light, the myth has a precise meaning with the environment inhabited by the Taino and reflects his character and his worldview. Yokahu Bagua Manakoti, Lord of the Three Names, icon of the tri-pointed stones, brings together the three basic factors which so happily blend in the West Indies: land, sea, and man.
Sun?
And
oh,
man.
Man.
Land, sea, and man.
Man.
So he's saying that our ancestors created this. We were the creators. We were the creators. Interesting take on that.
I mean, there's a concept in that we talk about in folklore and anthropology that the idea of myth-making, as we call it, because at some point some human had to relay these stories, right? Somebody started the oral tradition of talking about them. And a lot of the times what a lot of anthropologists believe is that these myths or these ideas of myth-making came as a way for people to try to explain the world around them, right? Explain their things that would happen in their environment, explain weather phenomenon, explain death, explain, you know, birth, anything. So that, to me, makes sense because, you know, if you live in a harsh environment, say, like the desert or something, where, you know, the Jewish people came from, it's a hard life, right? It's the environment is harsh, not a lot grows, it's a lot of wandering, a lot of luck. So their God, right, if we look at the kind of Old Testament God, was a bit of a harsh God, in my opinion. He was swift and stern in his judgment, and he had a very strict set of rules, and it was like his way or no way. He wasn't super benevolent, I guess. Same with if you look at you know, the Nordic cultures, say, a lot of their gods were similar, very warlike, very very harsh, very brutal, which is kind of consistent with the harsh winters and everything, and the harsh seafaring environment that they endured. So I do believe that people are a product of their environment in some sense. And I do believe that, yes, that probably does factor into the way they view the world, right? Into worldview. And so to me, it makes sense. I mean, like a lot of people always say our people lived in like a paradise, right? You know, we had plenty of food. We had plenty to eat. We had good weather. We had beautiful landscapes, water, and so then, yeah, why not? Why that would mean that we were blessed to some degree, right? So that would mean that our creator, our supreme being, was a benevolent and kind one.
Exactly, that's the key. You know, it's funny you should say that. In the psychoanalytical world, founding father was Sigmund Freud. In his sessions, he will often psychoanalyze his clients, and he will ask the God question, and he'll ask them, what's your image of God? And they will, and in his writings, he will say, well, people who are very judgmental have a judgmental God. People who are into, what do you call it, revengeful? You know, I'm going to get that person who... Yeah, I want to get that person who raped me, you know. And then he'll say, you know, their image of God is someone who's, you know, vindictive and what do you call that? What's that word? Damn. It's judgmental, right? judgment, you know, the judgment God, you know, the end of the world, we will all be judged. Some will go to heaven, some will go to hell, you know, stuff like that. And there's people who are really kind and very loving. Their image of God is, you know, a loving God, almost like a brother kind of thing, you know.
Right, so, a father.
But he did a lot of studies on that. Yeah, he did a lot of studies on that. So when I read that from Aaron, I'm like, wow, so maybe we're looking at the psychological makeup of our ancestors, right? Land,
yeah, I would
sea,
say so.
Land, sea, and I want to change the word man to community, the tribe, right? Man.
Right,
I mean,
people.
Land, sea, people, right? The community. And then all of a sudden, 1492, the devil shows up. Right? Damn.
Yeah. Well.
I have a question. You guys are making me think here. That's rare. But
this is it, man.
Don't hurt
I know. Beware of spooky loot.
Yeah.
What do you think differentiated natives back then versus Europeans? Because you're right, the European came with a totally different concept of what life is, what power is. You know, they're the ones that created power into or gave paper money power, right? Excuse me, and control. A different way of society that was created versus the Europeans versus the native. What do you think differentiated the mindset that caused that greed or a different kind of greed? Because I don't believe Native people really went to war to take over greed. I think it was more survival. But what do you think created that mindset on the other side of the world versus this side?
Do you want me to go first, Son of Cody?
Ladies first.
There we go. I think from what I've seen in my studies is that it was that the Europeans had, and through their Christian view, had a hierarchical view of the world and including the divine. And by hierarchical, I mean, or I'm probably messing up that word. Hierarchical, that's right. I mean that there were levels, right? So at the very top, obviously, was God. Then next level down was Jesus. Then next level down was angels, then man, and then there was a whole system going all the way down through all animals, you know, where when I say man, I literally mean man. It was men because it was men, then women, then children, then again, going down through every single animal and creatures that existed in the earth to the point where it felt, or they felt then, therefore, that they, as humans, were the closest thing on earth to being divine. And everything else was below them. That includes animals, that includes plants, that includes natural features like water, tree, I said plants, you know, dirt, mountains, rocks, anything. And I think it was that idea of saying, well, we are, you know, we are made in God's image, right? That is what we say. We are the closest to divine, even though we're stuck in this earthly realm, we're the closest to divine that there is. And therefore we are supreme and above all these other things around us. Whereas the native worldview doesn't see it that way. We're not, it's not a leveled, you know, ladder, right? It's a circle. Everything is connected. We are not better than or closer to divinity than certain animals or plants or mountains or water. We are not entitled to anything on this world, in this earth, because of that. We are merely a part of this circle. We are connected, and yes, we're an important part, but we are no more necessarily important than, you know, the biggest land animal to the smallest bug crawling around us. We all play a part in the great circle, and we need to acknowledge and respect that. So that is why there was no really native concept of ownership, right? We can't own land, especially. The land is not it's not property. It's its own important entity in this great circle. It's part of this great circle, and nobody can own it, and nobody is above it. And if anything, the land is above us because that's what we live off of. So I think, in my opinion, at least anyway, when these cultures clashed, that was one of the big issues, really. Or that the idea that status, you know, could be what was achieved through possessions and not through deeds necessarily or character mainly. Because again, within a lot of indigenous culture, things just were more utilitarian, if anything, you know. It's, I mean, aside from like sacred ceremonial objects, but having, you know, a certain amount of a particular mineral, and that's all it is. Like when we think about money or gold, for example, what is it? It's a mineral. It's a piece of rock, to say it in the most basic terms, that comes from the ground. And to go around saying, well, I have more of these pieces of rocks than you, so that makes me more powerful. I mean, imagine how crazy that must have sounded to an indigenous person to say, like, what's so special about these pieces of rock? I mean, you know, things only have value if we as humans put value on them, right? And money and possessions, again, a lot of wealth in terms of its most basic forms, it came from the land, it came from the earth, it came from our environment. And again, nobody in a lot of these indigenous cultures had any really concept of taking from that environment and claiming it as their own and owning it. And then to go even further and say, this makes me more powerful than you. So that's just my opinion. I don't know if anyone has any other thoughts. That's just what I always notice when I've done, you know, looking at this from an anthropological and a religious studies point of view.
That was deep. Okay. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, you know,
you're welcome.
If you don't mind, can I use music to
do it? Of course.
Illustrate my point.
Music, you know, is the universal language.
Yeah, I think our people were very, you know, the drumming, the rattles, and all that. That also spoke, you know, the voice of God, right? Our God image. I remember growing up. I don't know if I'm dating myself now. Every Easter on Channel 7. Okay. I'm not about Philly, but in Channel 7, ABC, they always used to show the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments by Charlton Heston.
Have you guys ever
seen that movie? You know,
yep, a long
as a
time
kid,
ago.
Kid, I always look forward to that, you know. And it shows, like, I mean, I don't want to point out the Jewish faith, but there's a whole sense of, you know, Moses leading the people against the evil Pharaoh, right? Ramses.
Right.
And I love the music, you know. It's something that to this day I remember that music, and it kind of like I can relate to that somewhat because, you know, here's the evil Columbus, you know, enslaving the people, and you know, damn, what was our move? Who was our Moses to lead us out of that? You know, so I'm always searching for that in any stories, you know, and. I'm just going to play a little clip, all right, so I can illustrate what I'm talking about. Hold on.
Yeah, do it.
I just don't know if I'm answering the question. Hold on a second. Hold on. As a little kid, you know, you hear this music, you hear this story. Again, the storytelling, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, here we go. Ready? And then I'm going to play another song. Hold on.
Thank you.
So you see, it starts out very, like, dumb, you know, like the power of God, you know, coming from heaven.
The wrath of God.
Yeah, you see? And, you know, going after Pharaoh, you know, going after Pharaoh. And then it gets a little more peaceful, you know, the people are leaving, the evil, you know. Now, I remember when I first wrote the song, Taino Calling Song, I was trying to figure out some music that maybe illustrates the island, you know. But I couldn't get that image away from my head. Hold on a second. I just lost the screen again. That's it, man. We're back at Skinwalker Ranch. He just showed up.
Oh, God.
Blame it on me,
I just lost
baby.
The screen.
Yeah. Oh, he blames you every time there's, like, a technical issue on our show.
Skinwalker Ranch. Yeah, we actually spoke about it in the beginning. Yo, I can't believe this. The screen just... Damn.
You sure you're just not having vision problems again, and you need your glasses?
No, it's frozen. I'm trying to reset the studio now.
Okay.
Oh wow.
So I wanted to compose a song. This is only a minute long. That kind of illustrated that, you know, like the Ten Commandments, the wrath against Columbus, you know, bam, you know what I mean? But
yeah, it'd be nice if Yukabu had done something like that, right?
Where open up his mouth and consume.
Yeah.
Hold on a second. So check this out. Ready? So when I read the writings of a lot of the writings of De La Casas, I remember him saying, right, and this is going to answer the question, he was telling the queen, right, he petitioned the queen, he sent a letter saying, I have never met a better Christian in my life, better Christian people in my life than the Taino. You know,
wow.
He saw them as role models. He saw them as role models of what a Christian should be. So whatever he witnessed, right, in the oppression, the murders, he still saw goodness in our people. He didn't see the revenge. You know, he didn't see the, you know, appealing to a God that will destroy the enemy. You know what I mean? So when I came up with the song, I thought of that. Like, what kind of people our people were that a foreigner, right, a stranger will say, my God, their spirituality is way deeper than ours, and they're actually better than us. They're better than any Christian I know. So this is a song I came up with. It's only a minute long. Has a little intro of like forest music.
There's a coqui somewhere there.
So I envision myself in a cave, you know, with the flute. And then I envision, you know, what was going on as a Bejique, trying to figure out what we're going to do as a people to fight these crazy people, right? So I invoke Yokahu, right? That's right.
Right.
And I invoke Yokahu, Bagua Marakoti. I invoke Wabansesh, the hurricane, right? And, of course, the calmness of Atabe. But not like vengeful or seeking revenge, but calm, cool, in the middle of destruction, you know what I mean? So it's, I think that's the image that I see that our people had of God. You know, no matter what, we're going to survive. No matter what, we got this. What do you guys think about that?
Well, first of all, was that you singing?
Oh, yeah, that's the Thaino Calling song. Yeah, that's when I first
composed that. That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. See, Okama means listen. So we listen to God, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Thaino Ti, God be with us. God be with you.
Right, right, where we get our name from.
To the invader, you know, God be with you. We're not going to, you know, lose our souls for an ounce of gold.
Can't put a tear in my eye. That's very beautiful, very deep.
You did, really?
Sure.
Yeah, like the Native guy, remember, in the 60s commercial? And they throw the rapper on the
Italian guy?
see, now you're messing.
Right. No. It is a beautiful song, and actually, it definitely is beautiful.
Yeah.
I can't sing.
But,
Yeah.
There's a mournful
quality to it, too, that's like, you know, I mean, it's like we're asking for help, like, you know, the Bihike is asking for help, but at the same time, I think it almost feels like there's some knowledge of and acceptance of that this is the end of the world, at least as we know it, right? Because it was. We survived, but, you know,
nothing was
ever the same. And it's sort of like the feeling I get is like it's like mourning the end of that world, but saying at the same time, you know, if this is what you, the supreme being is in the universe, is this, if this is what you will, then so be it. But it's still sad, right? And just hope you can guide us through it. But it's still a great law. You know, I mean, I can imagine I can't even imagine, but I would always think that for our ancestors at this time, this must have felt like apocalyptic, right? Like literally like the end of the world, because it was to them.
And you know what's interesting? That Saona Island off Santo Domingo, directly faces Santo Domingo, a little small island. There was an unknown chief living there, right? And he saw the destruction of the people, of the, you know, these invaders. And he volunteered to feed them cassava bread, you know. And so all the cassava bread that went to Spain or went to the Spaniards were from Saona Island. And there was an incident in which I don't know who it was, some a-hole let a dog attack him. Yeah, a war dog attacked him. And according to the story, he ripped his stomach apart and he was holding his organs. This unknown chief, I said he was older, man, was holding his organs as he was dying. And that set off the wars. Like, that's it. We can't take this anymore. We were generous. We were very giving. But that's it. We can't take this anymore. And that's when the battles began against the Spaniards, you know. I mean, the first major war. There were battles before, but this is the first major, like, Guatumanama was the one that led the battle. He was chosen to lead the battle, you know. So I don't know, man. So there's a side of us that's beautiful, kind, loving, but we can't take it anymore. That's it. And it was time to defend, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just sad. It's tragic, but
it is.
Oof,
yeah, and I hear that in your song, and that's what I mean. I think that's why it's like Lou said, it's like, it's definitely emotional. It brings a tear to your eye because it's like you can hear the pain and the desperation and the, you know, the realization that this is the end of an era, right?
Right. It's the end of an era, exactly. So what did survive? What image of our – okay, that's going to be part two that we want to go into next week. What image did survive the invasion story? what image of the supreme being, Okahuata, what survived? Did it die off when our ancestors were, most of us were killed or oppressed, giving saints and statues instead of semis? What worldview survives? Cultural continuity, right?
I told you, you always take it back to that.
Okay, Natalie, I got a big surprise for you. We got someone from Cuba who's Cuban.
Oh, God.
Has a few words to share. Yo, Lou, can you believe it's our first Cuban? After Natalie, our second Cubana, okay?
Sapada, 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 sapada. Oh, that is sapada, sapada, sapada.
That's an old Guyanese Arawak. He's singing a famous song called Fornication.
That was a jam back in the days.
No, I think
you
it's kind of cool, man.
You sing that to
a
girl, she going home with you.
No, it's kind of, you know, reason I put that, that's why I set you up, Natalie, but, you know we didn't go into the semis. That's part three. But isn't it cool that we have a semi, a sacred being that represents romance and sexual delight? That's kind of cool, man. See, that's another aspect
of
the worldview, right?
Yeah, and that's in a lot of cultural worldviews. You know, there's always got to be some being. Usually it's a lot of the time it's a female. A lot of the time, though, there's a male and a female that represents, sexual contact and romance. And yeah, because ultimately we need that, right? It's a big part of being human. We need we obviously need to procreate sexually, but we also are social creatures, and we romance is a big thing too. So there's lots of, that's why I think there's so many gods and goddesses of love or of sexuality or of seduction, because it's so such a big part of being human.
Yeah, that's it, man. Well, guess what? I can't believe it. We're running out of time. 7 minutes left. But another member of the Spooky Lou Show has shown up. What is this?
Oh, God. It's
creepy
an invasion
stuff.
Of...
creepy stuff.
Oh, God.
Creepy stuff. Are you there? Wait a minute, where's creepy stuff?
She's being so creepy right now.
That's her theme song.
That's
if you didn't know, that's
like
her theme
church,
song.
It's a church.
It's Gregorian chant. Stephanie, where are you?
Right.
He's praying.
Well, I think they got a hostage. The monks.
Oh, God.
Does she
sorry.
What happened?
Stephanie, creepy is not with us. What the?
Oh, creepy.
I guess she didn't read the sign, man. She didn't read the sign. Beware. So I think
poor
we're
creepy.
We ran out of time, man. We ran out of time. So I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. It's a very long show, but we did it, man. That's right. God,
you know
goddess, right?
I want to say something real quick. I'm going to call in next week. I'm going to be prepared for the next show. I want to listen. I definitely want to learn more about the mythology, because now I'm intrigued. I'm just not knowledgeable enough to really chime in and, speak about it more. But I'm definitely going to be prepared. I want to read some more. So definitely send me some stuff so I can read more about it and educate myself. And thank you for having me, guys. It was really a great show. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by more often.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. I'm going to try to listen next week. And
yeah.
If anyone out there listening,
call in.
You'll follow. Go ahead, again. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was saying, I want you to call in more. I want to hear more. I was telling... familiar. I'm a big fan of paranormal stuff, so it's always cool to listen to your show, and it's cool to finally connect on the show. So yeah, you call in. I go into paranormal and you know, mythological folklore stuff all the time on this show. So anything you have something to say on or some cool story to tell, please call in.
Absolutely, and likewise, please, you know. That's really dope. We should kind of make a special show on mythology and paranormal. Matter of fact, we could bring
it
up in the future. But
it overlaps all the time, right?
Nice. Okay, so let's do it. And anyone out there listening and want to follow me, you can go to Spooky, I forgot my own page, Spooky Paranormal on Facebook. And you guys have a good night. Thank you.
Don't follow him into
oh,
Yoke at night, though.
We just follow
don't go at night.
Exactly.
Natalie, let's do a one final skit there, okay?
Okay, I'm ready. I feel like I'm back in improv class.
Okay. Oh, you took that class? Cool, right?
Oh, yeah. I was a big theater person.
Oh, damn. See, how did I know that? Hold on. Looking for me.
Because you're a Bahique.
You know, this sacred stones, you know, I saw them. I saw you taking improv class.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Wait a minute. I just saw you got thrown out the class. Wait, what happened?
Oh, wait. Don't look at that day. Well, that could have been several days, actually.
There you go. See, I see it. I see it. Now I'm trying to find a song for our skit. And of course the Spooky Lou's left and okay, here we go, I found it. Okay, ready? We're in a cave. Okay? We're somewhere
God.
In Cuba in a cave. We're in the Cuba now, okay?
Oh boy.
Ubao, right? Say, hey Natalie,
yeah.
I told you we can't come this way. They told us there's a sign that says don't enter the cave. Why this is crazy in this cave. We're lost.
Well, but this is La Cueva de Ambrosia, and this is a really sacred place for our ancestors, you know? This is there's so many, like, check out these petroglyphs on the wall here. You see these?
Wait a minute. The petroglyph. Wait, it's like a button. Hold on, let me press it. Hold on a second. Did they move on? Have buttons?
Careful with that.
All right, let me press it. Damn, what is that? Wait a minute.
Oh, man, what'd you do?
Did our people believe in time travel? It looks like a time machine. Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Oh, my God. What's happening right now?
It's carved in the stone. It says, we are in trouble. The invaders are killing us. We need help. Oh, there's
oh
a drawing.
God.
Looks like it seems like the keeper of the time machine got killed. What the hell?
Right here?
Maybe it's not too late. Yeah, but can you see it? Look, maybe it's not too late. Let's start it. See what happens. See who comes to help them. Our ancestors.
Oh man,
maybe
this is
maybe
crazy.
Not too late. You know, Cuba, you know, there's a lot of trouble going on. And
yeah, I really hope so. It's like what they say, like time is circular, right? Things are repeating.
Yeah, so, well, you do it. You press the button. Go ahead.
Oh, man, I'm scared. Okay, so am I. No,
come on, you're Cubana, man.
All right, I know. Okay. I just got...
Let's see who's going to come and help.
Okay, I'm
Let's
just
see.
Gonna cross myself real quick first, cause that's what we gotta do. Okay. All right, ready? Count of three.
Ready?
Help me out here.
Go for it.
Hold my hand. Hold my hand.
Let's see what warrior. The warriors are coming. Which warriors are gonna come?
Oh man,
got
I think
it?
I know who. Okay, ready? One, two, three.
Alright, they're coming! Cuba Libre, it's coming! We've got this, I don't believe it!
hunger years.
Freedom!
Not too late.
You'll take our land, but you'll not take our freedom.
Who I leave it, it's coming, man.
Oh my god. No, I think I see Mel Gibson. William Wallace.
Braveheart, we got him.
There he is. Look at him. I see him there. What a badass.
So, Natalie, I'll see you next week, okay?
Yeah,
and
thank you for that. Good tribute to my late father's Scottish heritage.
You see now, how did I know that?
I don't know, man. I think that's crazy because my dad was, he died 2 years ago, but he was mostly Scottish, and I always tried to honor that side of my heritage too because they fought against invaders as well, you know? We jive in a lot of ways.
Well, there you go, man. That's it. It's something told me to play that, so.
Yeah.
We, you know, revolutions, they need help and spiritual help. Goes a long way.
Absolutely.
Courage, right?
Absolutely.
Courage.
Yes.
Is needed. So I know a lot of the communication was cut off in Cuba, right? So we pray for those people.
Definitely.
Fighters, right?
Yep.
Wow.
And they're it's still a hard time, but Cubanos were, if anything, were resilient. We lived through this regime for over 60 years, and it's going to take a lot more than this to knock us down.
That's it, man. That's it. So. This is it, man.
And I thank our Taino ancestors for that strength and that resilience, because I think that's where we get
it. That's it. That's it. It's coming, man. It's coming. So have a good one, all right? We pray.
You too, man. You too.
Awesome.